Welcome to True Crime in the Low Country, where we explore the darkest corners of the region's criminal history. Join host Frank Santarella and co-hosts Crime and Cask, Jim Cask, and Elaine Greenwood of Superwoke News as they dissect the chilling details of the Murdaugh murder trial, a case that has gripped the nation and exposed years of fraud, deception, and tragedy. It's true crime in the Low Country, and the truth is just around the corner.
How you doing? This is Frank, and I'm here with Jim Seidel and Elaine Greenwood of Super Woke News and Crime and Cask with Jim Seidel, and you're listening to WVFF 97.7 LPFM Radio. That's Red Brick Radio in Cottageville, South Carolina. Folks, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. How you doing? I haven't. It seems like we haven't talked to you in a month of Sundays.
I know. I'm doing pretty good. I was with some family for the past couple of days. It was really good to connect with some of them I hadn't seen in a while. So that was a nice little gift this week.
A nice little vacation. So you're home because you had said you're on a plane when we talked last. When we texted last night. So you are on a plane home, not outbound.
Correct. Yeah.
Oh, see, because we were concerned about you because of the nature of your investigative endeavors. We thought maybe the investigative gremlins got you.
You are actually. He's not joking.
But
you know, I do worry about you, and. I admit it's a little neurotic, but it's also, you're a great investigator, but you're out there beating the bushes. Yeah. So anyway, so Jim, what's up? What's going on with Myra? How are the book sales? What's going on with that? Tell us everything.
Well, you know what's funny is that I talked to my neighbor last night when I came in, and he asked me the same question. How's the book sales? And it drives him nuts because I go, I don't know. I haven't looked. And he's like, what? I'm like, I really haven't looked. And he asked me that about my first book. And I was like, I really don't look. I mean, the reports they send, you know, because you've got Kindle, you've got paperback, you've got hardcover. So I really don't look. I know that it's still trending in the white collar crime on Amazon, really high. Actually, my other book, Defending Alec Murdaugh, also is starting to kick back up. So we have two books now. Oops, trying to get this into the camera. Can't do this backwards. There we go. Because enough is enough, and Defending Alec Murdaugh, not guilty of reasonable doubt. So to answer your question, I don't really know. I look at Amazon once in a while, and I see it trending, and there's some five-star reviews, and that's fantastic. You got to give it a little time to get some traction, that's all.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. So what's going on? Myra is doing media, correct? She did Critical K recently.
She's doing Critical K next week. I think she's going to be on her, I think it's Facebook Live. And K has about, I don't know, 50,000 followers on her page.
And she's on Facebook?
She's on Facebook, yeah.
And she's going live on Facebook?
What's Myra's take on it? She likes doing media or what?
No, not really. You know, she's not a public figure. She's not a celebrity. She's just a person who got a letter in the mail from Colleton County to come sit on a jury, since she did her civic duty. You know, at any time these things come out, you know, when my first book came out, I guess I wasn't quite ready for the backlash that comes with writing a book, putting words down on paper makes people mad. I've come to find out. Words make people mad, especially when it comes to Alec Murdaugh, because they have a preconceived notion, if you will, of his guilt or innocence. And most of it is the guilt, and no matter what, I've seen people, they don't care. No matter what, they do not care. He does not deserve a fair trial. And that's just wrong, because that's just un-American, honestly. It's un-American. It's unpatriotic.
Did she get a death threat? Or somebody that
she didn't get a death threat. Somebody told her, if Alec Murdaugh gets a new trial, she should go commit suicide, which is an awful thing to say to anybody on any circumstances. But, you know, the woman is just, again, did her civic duty and is telling the truth as she knows it. And for that, people are just coming after her, coming after me, too. I mean, it's just
that's unfortunate.
All kinds of lies, and it just it's unfortunate that people have to be this way. But I will tell you this, and I'm trying to think of where I put it in the book, but she wanted to put this in the book, and she had a premonition, as a matter of fact, about people coming after her in this book, and she knew who the people were who were going to come after her for no other reason than putting words into a book. And she wrote in there that this basically that is this says more about you as a person to come after her than it ever will her. And but she says, has no doubt that, you know, a podcaster or podcasters and other people who follow these type of people will come after her and call her names and say all kinds of ridiculous things, only because they think that Alec Murdoch should not have a Sixth Amendment rights again, which I said, in my opinion, is un-American. And if you don't like the Sixth Amendment, I suggest you leave this country and go find a place that doesn't have the Sixth Amendment and see how well you like living there.
Yeah, got no problem with that. Now, the Supreme Court is sort of put on hold. They're giving both parties, what, until September 16th to respond to. McCullough has moved to unseal records related to the in-camera hearings. I guess it's the transcripts from the in-camera hearings. An in-camera hearing, by the way, is a hearing outside of everybody else, outside of the court. You know, it's usually in the chambers of the judge, and it involves just the attorneys and a few group of people, but it's not made public. So there was an in-camera hearing during which Judge Newman asked about evidence related to whether or not Juror 785, Myra, had made posts on Facebook or talked, you know, broken her vow to not discuss the case outside of, well, not discuss the case until the jury went to deliberate, frankly. But anyway, so McCullough got a, did he get the complete version or did he get a redacted version? McCullough got access to
what? McCullough got, he got the full version, including the body cam video of the SLED agents who went to interview the tenants. I've never seen any of it. I just know what was sent because that's what he requested.
Okay, he wants that released because he says that, among other things, it substantiates what Myra Catherine Crosby has been saying.
I don't know if he went out and said the words it substantiates, or what he said was, Myra would like these documents released, and the state of South Carolina does not. You decide for yourself why.
Well, no, they have. So they're arguing back and forth, and they have, the Supreme Court has given both parties, the prosecution and Joe, until September 16th to submit, you know, their arguments for why they should or should not be released. So I'm wondering, given
Here, not only have they still kept those records under seal, they have also sealed
motions requesting it. Yeah, yeah.
Jim, do you do anything with visuals? I mean, like YouTube and stuff like that? You do that, right?
What do you mean?
Well, you do stuff that has a visual with it, just in addition to audio, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I think you're broadcasting.
Oh, is that right? Anytime that you have reference to the bias against Alec Murdoch, you got to put a little clip in there from Frankenstein movie with all the villagers chasing Frankenstein with the pitchfork and the torches. All right? Because every time this bias against Alec Murdoch comes up, and listen, he did a lot of bad stuff, and that's okay. But this, when it comes to the murder of his family, only thing I see is the villagers chasing Frankenstein down the road with the pitchforks and the torches. It's just crazy. It's crazy. And again, it's me. I just get that visual all the time.
It is
intense. Yeah.
All cognitive thinking is thrown out the window.
It is. Well, that's a psychological truth. It's well studied that once people form an opinion, it's almost impossible to change that opinion. And that's why it's so important to get ahead of a narrative so that they don't form that deeply entrenched opinion. And, you know, we're critical from time to time, like all day, every day, about the defense, about Alec Murdoch's defense. And I don't know if that's always fair or not. It's sort of easy to criticize from the outside looking in. But I think it's fair to say that they didn't manage the PR particularly well, that at every step of the way up until the trial, so what was that, 2.5 years or whatever, they just didn't. They let the PR machine, you know, they let the narrative just spin wildly out of control. So it's not, you know, I kind of see why we have this mob hysteria and this absolute certainty that he's guilty. But I'm wondering, because I'm just curious by nature, you know, because I see this, even Fitz News has covered this idea of what are they hiding? What, you know, like you said, they have actually sealed the motion to unseal this, which to me suggests that there's more to this maybe than what we realize. And I'm wondering if there's more to it than Joe McCullough realizes, that there is, you know, we don't know we don't really know what all the state is investigating right now. But maybe they're doing the exact thing we want them to be doing, and they're saying we need not to make this public right now until our investigation is complete. Because, you know, we can definitely say that.
Well, then they should say that, because the response
they might think we presume it.
The response was, because of ongoing matters, the state cannot consent to unsealing at this time. I don't know what ongoing matters is, and neither does Fitz News, neither does anybody else.
I don't forget. Let's set Fitz News aside, because let's just set him aside, although they're welcome to chime in at any point. But I'm just wondering, that what that says is we've got, they don't even want to say we have an ongoing criminal investigation. They don't want to say anything. They sort of, you could almost admire that they rightly don't want to leak anything, because our takeaway is we don't know. And so we're sort of filling our lack of knowledge. We're filling in the blanks with nefarious motives. We're assuming a lot of nefarious motives, but it's possible, just in the realm of possibility, that we're wrong, that they're actually on track. They just don't want to tip their hand because, you know.
Well, what's in it?
I don't know. Okay, so that. Well, I see, this is what I don't want to say, but I think that Becky Hill didn't act alone. And I think we've talked about, there seems to be a close association with certain podcasters, these entities that are related to a particular podcast. And maybe the state is actually investigating that. And so maybe they're saying, we have warrants and we need to look at phone records. And we know some of these phone records are coming out in another case. In the 392 case, we may get access to all sorts of interesting phone records that in that case, they seem to be kicking and screaming and fighting like, you know, like a wild animal to resist having to disclose what in the heck they were doing. You know, were they colluding? The allegation is these people were colluding. And I don't even want to finish the end of the sentence. I'm not sure what they were colluding to do. I'm not sure if it was just naughty or if it was criminal or somewhere along that scale. But maybe we're just on that precipice of actually kind of understanding a little bit more, and they just need more time. Because I don't think the South Carolina Supreme Court would seal motions that way. You know, if you look at that, that's not something they do frequently. So I'm guessing, and I don't think they do it capriciously or arbitrarily or with an intent to have sleight of hand in any way. So I'm wondering if maybe they've seen something that we haven't seen, and even something that maybe Joe McCullough, in his brilliance and wisdom, totally missed, that, oh, yeah, that's important, too. So he's sort of suggesting, and actually I haven't spoken to Joe McCullough. He may come on and say no, but it seems like his position is the only one impacted by these records is Myra. But maybe what he's overlooked is, oops, no, there are other people, and he just doesn't realize that there are other interests involved. So I'm just saying, is it possible that we just need more time? Because I don't think the state is saying we will never unseal them. They're saying Not now.
Right. So here's something from the book, and you're going to like this because it's on page 62.
I got to go check. I got my book right here, so let's go. What? You know I love paginated books.
Juror 785. Let's see. Juror 75, oh, because enough is enough. On page 62.
The group text.
The woman says, I am the one who emailed Judge Newman about the egg juror talking. Then Dick, Harper Lynn, she's referring to, called me after trail, she writes trail, not trial, to ask me to meet. I recorded him, I recorded without him knowing, she writes funny. Thankfully, I did. It's helping Becky, exclamation point, between Luna Shark and Mark Tinsley guiding me.
And then well, you kind of ding, ding, ding hit exactly who I was talking about.
She kind of goes on to say in another one, that thanking Luna Shark for all these past months of help, and that she wanted to go buy them lunch. I'm assuming Domino's.
And she's the one that emailed the judge about the egg juror.
Right. I would love to see that. I would love to see the email because I know this person's writing, and I've read in this Discord, I don't know, at least 50 to 75 different posts she had. And her writing is such that it's probably of a, eighth grader, ninth grader, the spelling, the grammar, and all these things. So if that email is written in such a way that is anywhere eloquent, she didn't write it. And if she didn't write it, and she's thanking all these people for all their help, listen, I can put two and two together if that's what you want, but if you start looking at some things, if people were involved with this woman who worked at Domino's and helping her during the trial to write an email to a judge to try to get a juror kicked off, you tell me how many crimes that's committed, because there are several. If that could be a possibility, and I don't know if it is, but if that's a possibility,
it doesn't look good.
None of this looks good.
But none of it looks good. Do you want to talk a little bit about the spreadsheet that Liz Farrell had generated? Because we did live stream content with an attorney who had been part of that Discord group who talked about that spreadsheet, and it concerned her because it was essentially doxing the jurors. It was outing the jurors.
We certainly can, but I would love to know your opinion on how quickly the South Carolina Supreme Court is jumping all over this. Including this motion for Myra. I mean, have you seen a state Supreme Court move this fast?
Yeah, because it's just a motion. It's just a motion to grant or deny something. Have I seen courts do that?
I know, yes. But they're not sitting around waiting for motions from attorneys. I mean,
this is a motion fairly put before them, and they're going to rule on it. And the short answer to your question, yes, I've seen that. So I don't think... I'm pleased that they're addressing it. It's not a complex motion, so they can actually rule on it. But it's interesting. I'll give you that. It's interesting. But
why seal the motion?
I don't think they would do it capriciously or arbitrarily, Jim. I think they have a reason.
Here's a reason. It might be motivation. The Supreme Court is getting... the seats are changing now. I think they've changed, right?
Right.
Yeah. So could that be a motivation to get things moving along?
It could be. I mean, you know, they did. I haven't seen a date yet that they've set to hear the arguments for, I guess, the jury tampering, if I'm using the correct term there. I don't know.
I haven't seen it either. I haven't. So I don't know.
I'm assuming it's probably this fall, maybe early winter.
You mentioned, it depends on their calendar, and it depends. What they're talking about is the rights of one person, and even though they're important rights, there are constitutional rights. You know, they have other cases. So I'm sure they have a full docket.
Elaine and I were talking about something that came up in the Supreme Court yesterday. the something about this the students lockbox or the freedom of education thing, you know, where come on, Elaine, help me out here. Where the student would get so much money to go to a different school and stuff like that, and the Supreme Court just turned that down, said it was unconstitutional.
Oh, to give public money to private schools?
Yes. Well, to the student to be used in private schools.
With Alan Wilson, we did not talk about that.
We talked
about Loper Bright Enterprises. We talked about the Chevron deference.
He had mentioned that the Supreme Court ruled on it, and that the outgoing Supreme Court Chief Justice, that might have been his parting shot. You remember that? No.
No, because there's no outgoing. Roberts is still the Supreme Court Justice.
No. South Carolina State Supreme Court. All right. Let's.
I don't know. I watched it over last night, and I don't recall. I think there was another conversation. It's an interesting conversation, but this is the thing. That does happen. I mean, it just certainly happens where, when the makeup of the court changes for whatever reason. I know of a court case where the court was split 5-4 one way. And then one of the justices retired, and so there was a huge push by the four to delay publishing the opinion. And so it was a 5-4 decision. So the four said, well, we know this one justice is retiring. Let's not publish the opinion until the new justice is seated. And then they asked to rehear the case, rehear the entire thing, and decided 4-5. It changed how the case was decided. So if you're asking, does that happen? Yeah, it does. But I don't know that. I don't know if that's what's going to impact Alec Murdoch's. He's going to get a second trial. He just is. I don't see any way the state's going to avoid it. I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a Friday late in the afternoon decision. You know, a lot of times when the court, when some monumental thing in news happens, they announce it Friday evening, Friday afternoon, so that they hope that nobody pays any attention to it, and then, you know, off you go. So. But I don't think there'll be a lot of fanfare with it. I think Alec will get a second trial, and then we'll be back to square one. And at that point, the conduct, the book, the claims made in the book or the inferences in the book will relate to a whole different. Alec Murdoch will no longer have any interest. You know, that won't impact him going forward at all. But it certainly will impact other people who engaged in behavior or aided and abetted that behavior. So there may be a whole new bunch of trials that relate to people. You know, the Myra speculates, and she says it's speculation. She's not asserting it as fact, but she does speculate that there was a conspiracy. And if she's right, this was the point I'm trying to make. The Supreme Court may be saying, or the prosecution may be saying, we think it's really credible. We just want more time to have all the evidence we need to charge people, because there's a whole separate series of criminal conduct that actually don't relate to Alec Murdoch. They relate to other people who seem to be sort of involved in one way or another with Rebecca Hill.
All right. Listen, here's a great question. Here's a good question. Now, Jim's second book is about the jury, and
yes,
when the new trial is in session, that's the jury. The past juries are going to be a moot point. All right, they're not. Mm-hmm. There's no bearing there. But
with respect to Alec, yes,
right now, the first book, Jim's first book, Not Guilty. What was the name of it, Jim?
Game On. Yeah.
That book is relevant. Do you think, this is a stretch, do you think they're going to call Jim Kaskin as an investigator?
Expert witness.
Well, no.
As an investigative
source, and yes, and as a consultant. You might have a
but
whole
not
new.
An, he would not qualify as an expert witness.
No, we're not looking for an expert witness. He'd be an investigated source and consultant.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Yes.
Jim, you have a whole new job. You could.
No, absolutely. And I think that you would be a valuable member of the defense team, because I hate to say this, but I sometimes have the impression that the team didn't really. There seemed to be a whole lot of evidence that. I don't know if they rejected it or just didn't know it existed, but you've talked to the people, you've seen the documents, you've beaten the bushes, right. You've been to the door, you've knocked on the door. Yeah, I think you would be invaluable to the defense in all kinds of ways. Yes, 100%. Yeah.
By the way, I did a story at CrimeAndCast.com on. It's called Obstruction, Supporting Perjury, Conspiracy to Commit a Crime, and Interference with Court Proceedings. I explained it in detail what those particular crimes are in a hypothetical world. And if somebody, I don't know who, but if somebody were to have stepped in with this person from Domino's Pizza in this email that was sent to Newman, if they helped construct this and came up with a fabricated story to help the judge decide to get Myra off of this jury, that is obstruction of justice, suborned perjury, conspiracy to commit a crime, and interference with court proceedings in the state of South Carolina. And there might be more, but I go through those in quite detail, including filing false reports. It's an incredible thing if that were to happen, and I don't know if it happened. Maybe that's what they are investigating right now.
That's what I was thinking. That yeah. we're assuming, because you know, and media did this all along. They said, well, they're not responding right now, and we have a deadline, and we'd like to know the answer right this minute. And because they're not responding, we're going to assume blah blah blah, and they almost always get it wrong. So in this case, I think the state or the prosecution is being appropriately discreet. So I don't want to know what their investigation is about, because when we know day by day, things get leaked, everything's a mess, and it becomes too political, because the prosecution or the state is pandering to the media, where this way they're not. They're saying, we're keeping this totally sealed. And so I don't, you know, there may be an incredibly interesting story. And if there is, Jim, you're kind of at the epicenter of it. And then so is that attorney I mentioned, who is a North Carolina attorney. And she, I don't know that she would ever want to have anything to do with this again, but she certainly is knowledgeable. And she's, from a legal perspective, she understands what has a legal cause of action and what is just simply bad behavior, because there is a difference, you know. So, but I think it's alarming that you have two licensed South Carolina attorneys that seem to be engaged in stuff that seems questionable. It just does. And you know, read Juror 785, because enough is enough to get an idea of the details. But yeah, this is not over. I'll tell you this.
Thing is just beginning.
Yeah. And I think that I don't think Alec Murdoch is even that interesting a man. The story isn't about him. To me, there is another person who would be absolutely fascinating, whose name comes up. In fact, his name is in that text or that post that you just read. I think that guy is at the epicenter of everything. He's definitely involved in the 392 case. I think he is the fascinating creature in all of this. And I think the 392 case is the most interesting of all the litigation, including the trials, because it gives you an overview of humanity, of how people, you know, we had this event, and then we have all these people that interacted with that event or exploited it or monetized it or whatever it was they did. And that is so much more fascinating than who killed Paul and Maggie.
This thing is
it's just
like
beginning.
Yeah, it's like the finger legs. They just they keep moving.
Is that where you were?
No, no, I was in Wisconsin.
So that was what was in the background of the text of that photo was a lake. I thought it was a lake. I did.
Do you guys think that at some point, take all the financial crimes and put them on the side?
Yes.
Just take the murder conviction. Do you think Alex is going to end up a victim at some point, or is going to be viewed as a victim?
No.
Well,
no.
Victim. When that's a strong word. Victim, as far as you know, I think there was a lot.
A miscarriage of justice.
It certainly was. I think there was a lot of people who had motives, financial motives. To see him guilty, and you don't have to look far to see who those people are. To see they wanted him not guilty, not maybe hung jury, guilty. Him being guilty had a financial windfall for a lot of people.
And if he hadn't engaged in those financial transactions, yes, I think possibly they might somehow get back to seeing him a victim. But there's just this global perception that he's guilty. So even if he gets acquitted in the second trial, people will think he got away with it, and they think he's a bad person because of those financial crimes. But,
did you say he wasn't a victim because of his financial crimes?
No, I said that people won't perceive him that way. I think he's
right.
a victim? I think he is a victim.
You're
no,
right.
I'm just talking
you
about
have
the
to,
perception.
Right, you have to be able to compartmentalize each little thing that's going on here. Here's the murders, guilty or not guilty. Here's the financial crimes, he's pled guilty. Now here's a completely different thing that's attached to this, which is the alleged jury tampering, which is the alleged obstruction of justice, the alleged, suborning perjury and conspiracy, and all these schemes that are just like offshoots of what happened with him. He's really just it's just the gateway. Once you go through that gate, and there's all kinds of things that are going on, and it was all because of finance, not somebody making $100 on selling a few t-shirts. I'm talking about millions of dollars, book sales and TV shows and cases that were won, these type of things. That book sales, nobody wants to buy a book or see a TV show about a hung jury from a guy who said he was guilty in some financial crimes. It's kind of a no one's really interested in that, but guilty.
No, and I think if there hadn't been this enormous press, and think about it, you've got to sort of undo the perception created by Netflix. That alone is enough to sway hundreds of millions of people around the globe. So if there hadn't been the perception of the evil Alex Murdoch, the HBO where they had his face sort of camouflaged and the graphic. Okay, so the graphic is he's cut apart like a puzzle piece almost. Anyway, so if they hadn't done that smear, that global smear, I think people would see him as a victim. But
I know. When people say, I need to catch up on this. I need to watch Netflix. I'm like, God, don't do that.
Oh, I know. It makes you cry. But if we didn't have that body of massive PR defining him as the evil Alex Murdoch, and if we didn't have those financial crimes, which, it's annoying in a way because all of his victims were made whole and then some.
Right.
And I don't like that he did it, but some attorneys around this country do that. You talked about this. We talked about this. That other attorney in South Carolina, the woman who I think stole something like $30 million, and all she got was a 5-year probation. She didn't serve any jail time at all and she didn't make restitution to her clients.
Right.
So I don't know, but I don't. There's really something about Alec, and I think a lot of it has to do with the PR that the public. The people that didn't know him and didn't like him before the trial don't particularly like him now. Although I think I saw that he's getting love letters in prison.
Stay with us on True Crime in the Low Country. We'll be right back after this short commercial break. Don't go away.